The Accidental Entrepreneur is produced by Beinhacker Law and brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors. One of One Productions, the New Jersey-based podcast studio that produces and edits both audio and video podcasts. They sell equipment for the average podcaster and have even created a guesting kit exclusively for our listeners. North Authentic, the conscious hair care marketplace offering the cleanest brands from around the world. The Healthy Place, the e-commerce site with thousands of supplements to help you live a healthier life, along with natural solutions for chronic pain, stress, anxiety, depression, sleeplessness, and much, much more. And be sure to support the podcast by ordering some logo merchandise from our online store. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
It's very hard to get a traditional deal these days. They're looking for people who have at least 100,000 people on an email newsletter list, wow. A million followers. And if they're not looking for that criteria, it has to be a really, really hot trend that they know they can get the book out and still capitalize on the trend, which is very rare. Or they're a small press, which right. really means you're not going to get much for being with them, and you'd be better off to self-publish in most cases. Some institutional presses that are associated with universities and colleges might make a fit for some people, but most people, if you're not getting a deal with the big five, which is really hard to get, you're really better off financially and rights-wise, because when you get a traditional deal, you're giving them all your IP. Right. So everything you put in the book no longer belongs to you. It belongs to the publisher.
Right. Exactly. Well, that's depressing. So I have like 2,500 people on my mailing list. So I'm not even close. I'm like 2.5% there. So I'll have to keep working on that.
But you can self-publish, and the 2,500, yeah,
Can actually. The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode.
Hey, I'm Julie Broad, the founder of Book Launchers, your professional self-publishing services team, helping you write, publish, and promote a nonfiction book to grow your brand and build your business.
All right, Julie. So thanks so much for coming on the show. We were talking a little bit off the microphone, but I think this is going to be a real interesting conversation because your business as an entrepreneur is helping people write and publish. Well, are you a writer or are you more help on the publishing side?
So I'm none of it, but my team.
Okay. So you don't want any credit for anything. Just keep good. That's a good advice for people. Keep good people around you.
I mean, truly, I mean, my background is real estate. I have an MBA in real estate and finance. I'm not a publishing pro. So when I launched, I had 10 beta clients and I hired somebody who had done publishing. And then I hired somebody who also had turned a book into a 7-year running television series that he was actually nominated for an Emmy for. And those were my first two hires. And I did that very purposefully because I didn't have a background in books other than publishing two of my own. So I really literally don't touch the books for the most part.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't want to get ahead of us, but, okay. So you said you're from Vegas, you're in Vegas, right?
I'm in Vegas. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you're not necessarily from Vegas. We'll find out in a minute. So why don't we go, tell your backstory a little bit, how you got started, where you grew up, what your background is, your training, maybe you said you weren't really a writer or an English, journalism or anything like that. So maybe we can go back and then we'll work our way up to what you're doing now.
Sure. We kind of just teased all the stuff. So
yeah, well, it's called a hook.
That's right.
People get hooked and they want to listen.
Exactly. And we do that with books too. You want to make sure you open your book with a hook. My background, I'm Canadian and I started real estate investing in Canada in 2001. And so all the stuff I did, you know, for 15 years was real estate related. But one of the things I did was publish a book on real estate investing. And that process opened me up to self-publishing, not by accident, but because the publishers, at first the publishers were interested in me, Wiley in particular was interested in working with me, but they didn't like my book idea, but they said, hey, we've got an idea. So they gave me a book idea and they actually built a book proposal with me, which is really unusual. Normally you have to have an agent and a proposal will get you the agent or the agent will help you with the proposal. Right. But Wiley worked with me, the acquisitions editor helped me build this proposal with the book idea they gave me. So I assumed I was getting a book deal, but in the end I got an email from them that said the marketing department didn't think I would sell enough books. So I didn't get a book deal after all that.
And this was going to be on what? On real estate investing?
On real estate. Yeah, it was on real estate. And my first idea, which I had presented to a few publishers as well as Wiley, people said, oh no, that's a general real estate investing book.
Right.
But I knew I'd read like more than 70 real estate books. I knew this book hadn't been written. And I went back to that idea after being rejected by Wiley. And I decided to write it anyways, but I felt forced into self-publishing. So there was this part of me that felt like I wasn't legit. Right.
Well, I guess, yeah, right.
But I decided to do it as good or better than a traditionally published book. So I was like, well, I'm not getting a book deal, but I'm going to make it so nobody ever knows that it was self-published. And so I dove into self-publishing with a vengeance, really, like truly, it was kind of my ego had been crushed. So now I was going to really give her. And I wrote the book that I really thought needed to be written and I self-published it and I took it to number one on Amazon.
What year was this?
2013.
Okay. So were there a lot of self-publishing options at that point or?
I had to do it all myself. There wasn't a lot of resources. There was a few, there was some online stuff. There was a book called APE, Author, Publisher, Entrepreneur, which I devoured every single word of that book to learn anything I could. But there wasn't a lot, but whatever there was out there, I researched it. I researched everything about traditional publishers and I self-published it and it went to number one. So ahead of Dan Brown, ahead of Game of Thrones, like not number one in a category, which is what most people say.
Right, no, I know, yeah. And you're number one for a day or something. There's some way you can become number one for marketing purposes, right?
Exactly. Just to get that orange banner. And I mean, I was number one in print for 48 hours, not quite 2 days, but I was in the top 100 for a month and a half.
Oh,
so it was a pretty legit launch. And that was really, really great. But it opened my eyes to the power of self-publishing. Because again, the readers don't care. Nobody cared that I wasn't published by Wiley. All they cared about was what I was offering in the book.
And yeah, if of I course. Could help them. Right. But basically what you're doing is you're hiring a printer to print your book for you. I mean, that's basically what, I mean, obviously they compile it and they bind it or whatever. Maybe they warehouse it, but that's what you're doing. It's not a book that a company that's basically hiring you to write the book and then they make money and maybe pay you a little bit as you sell the book. That's why you didn't get the deal to begin with, right? Because they figured, well, we're not making money on this. So they passed.
Exactly.
As they probably do for thousands of deals, right?
It's very hard to get a traditional deal these days. They're looking for people who have at least 100,000 people on an email newsletter list, a million followers. And if they're not looking for that criteria, it has to be a really, really hot trend that they know they can get the book out and still capitalize on the trend, which is very rare. Or they're a small press, which really means you're not going to get much for being with them and you'd be better off to self-publish in most cases. Some institutional presses that are associated with universities and colleges might make a fit for some people, but most people, if you're not getting a deal with the big five, which is really hard to get, you're really better off financially and rights-wise because when you get a traditional deal, you're giving them all your IP. Right. So everything you put in the book no longer belongs to you. It belongs to the publisher.
Right. Exactly. Well, that's depressing. So I have like 2,500 people on my mailing list. So I'm not even close. I'm like 2.5% there. So I'll have to keep working on that.
But you can self-publish and the 2,500, you can make quite a bit of money. And even more than that, like you can generate clients and shorten your sales cycle and open the door to speaking. And there's so much more to a book that you don't need to have that 100,000 person email list.
Yeah. Well, I think that people should recognize that That's really the reason for writing the book. It's not that you're going to become a famous author and you're going to be on the New York Times bestseller list. Everybody's going to be reading your book. I mean, that would be great. But look, I have a podcast. I don't expect to sign a deal with Spotify like Joe Rogan. Mm-hmm. But it is a piece that improves your credibility, right? Definitely leads to speaking engagements. Is something like a leave behind or a calling card type of a thing. And just like anything else, it's content, you know, marketing. You know, but I think a lot of people don't know where to get started. That's the issue.
Yeah. And it's monetized marketing too. So that's the other thing, right? It's something people don't throw away. They usually pass to somebody else or they donate it, but you're also going to make, even if it's nominal, you're still going to make $5 to $10 per book sold, which is more than you can say for anybody reading your sales copy somewhere else.
That's for sure. That's true. You know, I think people have this inherent, I definitely do have this inherent issue about throwing a book out.
Oh yeah.
Like tearing up the flag or something, you know?
Yeah, I have that because at a lot of conferences, people give me their books and I have that really awkward moment of what do I do with this thing, right?
Right. Oh, I add this to the 20,000 other books I have back in my office.
And you got to pack, like, do I pack this back in my suitcase? Do I throw it out? Do I just leave it here and hope somebody gives it a good home? Like, it is awkward.
I'm sure. Everybody wants to show you their book, right?
Yeah, it happens a lot.
All right. So let's go through the entrepreneurial side of it, right? Because now you didn't get to write your book. So you're doing research on writing your own book. Now you're not doing, the company's called Book Launchers. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. So you're not, that company hasn't developed yet, right? You're still self-publishing your book.
That's right.
Right. We haven't gotten to that point yet. Okay. So.
Yeah. I mean, I did all the research and I put that book out, and after it came out, I actually had friends that had book deals with Wiley that okay. were wondering why their book didn't do well, or they were asking me because I had so much success. They actually asked me to be a co-writer or write a chapter so they could put my name on the cover. It's so funny, okay, right?
That's funny.
I didn't have enough marketing juice to get the
right,
deal.
And here you are, people are asking you, right? Isn't that the irony of life? You know, it's like, yeah.
It is. It was one of those things that you're like, sure, I'll do that. But
right. You know. Really? You want me? I know people are like, will you come speak for us? I'm like, okay. About podcasting? I go, I'm not a podcasting expert, but you podcast, so you must know a lot of this stuff. I mean, seriously, I do talks on podcasting now. I'm not a podcasting expert. I just self-taught, you know.
Exactly.
Funny. And that's but it's all about credibility, you know?
Exactly. And that's when my book came out, I had done it and I had done it well. So now people were coming to me for this. And it was way more fun than teaching people about dealing with tenant problems and a lot of the real estate stuff that I had been doing for 15 years by this time. And I started to see a real need in the marketplace because there was companies out there that were really focused on getting a business card book. So, you know, a 10 chapter thing that you can whip up in 90 days.
Right.
And people were putting it on Amazon and wondering why their friends thought it was bad.
That's why I asked you about the timing of it, you know, and what was going on in the industry. So you saw this gap. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I saw the gap, and because these people that were coming to me for help, some of them had really bad books. And then I was also seeing the other side of it was the traditionally published authors and how, you know, the marketing was thought out before they wrote a word. And so you could see the gap between how self-publishing was, you know, write the book and then figure out how to sell it.
Right.
And traditional publishing was all about positioning and setting it up for marketing success. And that combined with the fact that nobody had the time or even the energy to do what I had done in terms of diving into the whole process. Because figuring out how to hire editors alone was just a nightmare. It's like you get quotes from $8,000 down to $300. What's the difference?
Right.
And all of that stuff took hours for me to figure out. And I made mistakes. And I just kept thinking, nobody has time for that. I was motivated by vengeance. And that's a rare thing, right?
Exactly.
So bit by bit, this idea for Book Launchers kind of formed in my head. But I knew marketing had to be a big component of it. And so I was really trying to figure out how can I build a company that helps you market the book at the end, but we're building that marketing into every step because title decisions are vital. Chapter titles are really important. So all this stuff gets layered in. And so it couldn't be a piecemeal kind of like hire us for this. It had to be like a full service. But the few companies that were out there charged $35,000, $50,000, you know, even $120,000.
Right.
To do what I wanted to do. And I also knew that was not something me as a business owner would have upfronted.
Right.
So I was like, how do I balance this? And so I started to formulate Book Launchers with all of that stuff in my head.
Yeah. So I think you approached it, and you should approach it like you are with a product that you're producing. So a lot of people skip those steps too. They start their business. They don't do the marketing research. Are people going to buy this? How are they? So if you want people to read your book because it you know, it influences them, it raises your credibility, whatever. Yeah. I would think that you would always start with the side of it, the marketing side of it. Like, you know, you might have a lot of great things to say in your opinion, but it doesn't matter if nobody cares or is interested in it.
A lot of people write a book because they've been told their story is really good and they should write a book.
Right.
And that may be true, but a great story doesn't make a great book. Right. There's a lot that goes into it. And ultimately, your book might be about you, but it's for your reader. And you really have to first and foremost know who that reader is and what you're offering them. And it's not as simple as saying, oh, I'm writing about leadership. It's got to be like, what's the outcome of learning about leadership for this specific person? So it's diving deep enough and having that all positioned really before you write a word, or having somebody who can look at your manuscript and figure out what that actually is and fix it.
Yeah, so I guess an editor, picking the right editor becomes pretty important, unless you're like the best writer around.
Yeah, it's pretty rare that we get a book that it's more common that somebody's even hired an editor and we still have to start over in terms of developing a hook and finding reader positions.
Because they just went down the wrong path, is that?
Editors are not marketers.
Right.
So yeah, there's a really, really important distinction. So we have people who are story experts on our team, and writing coaches and writers who are actually setting up that marketing hook right from the beginning. And that gets missed. And editors aren't marketers, so they don't have the same mindset.
Well, it makes sense. So how did you start building your business? I mean, you know, here you are, people, you see that people are interested in using your service. What do you do? I mean, you're an entrepreneur now. So what do? You knew the real estate side.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I started a real estate training and education company in 2008. So having started a business in probably the worst timing you could ever
imagine.
Yeah,
that is a terrible timing, at least in the United States. So were you here in the States at that point?
I was in Canada at that time. And
believe me, it was crashed there too.
It was terrible there too. So it was really, really poor timing. But having started a business and built it into something that was quite successful in Canada, I kind of felt like I could do anything. I was like, well, if I try hard enough, I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
So I had that mentality going into this, but also I had the beauty of having a personal brand where people knew me as somebody who does what I say I'm going to do. And so when I formulated what book launchers would be, I sent an email out to my real estate list and I said, hey, this is what I'm doing. I need beta clients. So you're going to get a discount and you're going to be 10 first, you know, first 10 people, it'll be bumpy because I'm figuring out this process, but I got 10 people who signed up, pretty quickly. And then I hired the people to figure out how to do it from there.
Right. Well, that's what I was going to say. You're a writer, right? So did you write a business plan, at least a lean canvas, something where you sketched it out and said, okay, I'm going to need 6 people to help me do this because they got to do X, Y, and Z. I mean, what did you do from a strategic standpoint?
Yeah, I did actually have to do a business plan, but not because I believe in it. I'm not a huge believer in business plans, but I had to because this was part of our process coming down to the States, and we're on what's called an E2 investor visa, and it was based on the company.
Okay.
So I had to do a business plan for
submit that.
For that. So I did a lot of research that I wouldn't have otherwise done into like the overall publishing industry, but my experience is kind of like, you know, kind of like when you're about to have a baby and they tell you to create this birthing plan, and so you create this birthing plan and it's like your dream of what it's going to be. And then everything goes completely the opposite.
Well, I think that's where people miss. And contrary to you, I'm a big advocate of business plans, but I'll say that up front. But
that's totally fine.
I think it's what people think a business plan is you're right. What they do is they think it's this document that they're going to write and it's going to be this, they're going to lay out their life for the next 30 years. And yeah, life doesn't happen in a straight line. What they need, and that's why I said, whether it's one page, it's really a strategic plan where you don't just go in your head with your eyes closed and figure it out. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of people do that. And obviously they do that with writing a book too. And you don't have to write the book. You can literally outline it, sketch it, right? Figure the marketing plan out. What should this be? Look at the marketplace, do the research. That's what I meant. I really, you know, because you're right. But if you have a business plan, strategic marketing, whatever, you have to use it. You have to use it and change it and go back to it and say, was I right about that? Well, you don't just put it on the shelf and say, well, that looks nice. And then, you know, because it's worthless then. Yeah,
exactly. So yeah, I mean, and frankly, the business plan that I had to create for the purposes of crossing the border was mostly useless, but it was fun researching competitors. And that was something that I went deeper into because of the need for that business plan. It gave me more ideas than I would have had otherwise. But to me, it was kind of starting and figuring it out as we started to, you know, because we had the clients. And we had to figure it out. We had 10 books that we had to create.
Exactly.
We were going from there, but that's how it started. And
here's a word from our sponsors. Looking to get into podcasting? Maybe to market your business for your own enjoyment or because you have a message you want to get out there. One of One Productions is a New Jersey-based studio just over the George Washington Bridge that caters to the booming business of podcasting. They offer a comfortable atmosphere using the latest technology available to record your podcast. And they are a full-service media company offering both audio and video production services, creating both audio and video podcasts, as well as video shorts for business and personal use. Professional audio equipment packages are available through their website for all budgets. And be sure to check out their podcast guesting kit, created specially for our listeners. Care for your health. Care for the planet and look flippin' great doing it. North Authentic is a conscious hair care marketplace offering the cleanest brands from around the world. Their pro stylists curate only the most fabulous non-toxic hair products with better-for-you shampoos, serums, masks, and more that actually give you gorgeous hair without hurting your health or the planet. Hey, you've only got one life, one planet, and one glorious mane. Might as well treat them all as best you can, right? Try a 100% clean hair care routine prescribed just for you using their link in the show notes. If you don't see a big, beautiful difference in how your hair looks and feels, you can tell them they're crazy. Do you battle chronic pain, stress, anxiety, or depression? Well, if you take any supplements or you're interested in natural alternatives, you need to know about findyourhealthyplace.com. Find Your Healthy Place has thousands of supplements to help you live a better quality of life, as well as natural solutions for chronic pain, stress, anxiety, depression, sleeplessness, and much, much more. Need guidance? Use their live chat feature and talk to a wellness consultant right on their website. And be sure to use our coupon code TAEPODCAST for all your purchases to get the best prices at findyourhealthyplace.com. Follow their links in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
And it's the greatest thing. But having started a business, two businesses, really, our investment business is a business, gives you a lot of insights that I think a lot of people wouldn't go from, because it was kind of like going from zero to not quite 60, but zero to 45.
Very fast, right?
Pretty quickly is all of a sudden, you know, you're starting day one with 10 clients and I had to hire immediately. So I started immediately with two employees and we started to hire contractors right away. So it was a pretty quick process, but one that I think I was able to do fairly easily because of my previous business experience.
So do you have, or did you start to formulate a process that the writer, let's call them the client, is going to go through to create this document, right? I mean,
yeah, we call it the hashtag no boring books process. And it starts with the story expert, developing that hook, developing the reader, really developing the outcome of the outcome, and then developing chapter templates, and then pairing you either with a writer and then a writing coach. And then as you go through the three different kinds of editing, we're also doing market research, competitor research, pricing research, keyword research. The marketing team starts laying out launch strategies and all of these pieces. I mean, it's an extraordinary, to give you a sense, if anybody's familiar with the software Process Street, it's all about processes. So everything is documented in these checklists and processes that we have, training materials for anybody that has to come in. But one of the person on our team, our production manager, has been invited to Process Street as one of the 10 wizard users. So that's how elaborate our processes are, because we, over the last 4.5 years, we've developed really extensive processes, because as you hire people, especially contractors, you need them to kind of know exactly what to do. And so it's all the same book launchers feel. And so we've really had to develop processes, and it's fun for the people doing it, that they're like, okay, this is exactly what I have to do. And they love checking things off.
Right. Of course, it makes it easier.
Yeah.
And I think when you're dealing with a lot of virtual people, contractors, VAs, or whatever you're dealing with for your business, you have to have these process. I hear the Canadian coming out of you, the process.
The process, yeah.
Right. You have to have these in place, you know, to guide the people that you want to create some sort of a product or quality or whatever that you're trying to do. So let's talk about it. So you had your tent. So how did it go? How did it go with the first 10?
Interestingly, we didn't actually end up completing a book right away with the first 10. They were slow. They were really slow to get going. And we went to a couple of conferences and there were 6 and 8 people that joined us pretty quickly after these 10. And it was those people that actually finished the book first.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. So our beta people who were supposed to go through the bumps didn't. And so right. we learned.
Well, remember, they didn't come to you and said, hey, I'm motivated. I want to write a book. Exactly. You went to them and said, hey, I'm doing this. Would you participate? So they weren't so motivated. They had other things going on in their life. I'm not surprised to hear that.
Yeah. So it was interesting. You know, a few of them never finished the book. A few took a really long time to finish the book. And then it was these other folks that actually signed on at these conferences that ended up really truly being the betas, even though that's not necessarily what they signed up for. But we learned a lot going through that process with them and starting to kind of build out all the pieces that we needed. Because a book's a big project. You know, it takes most people a year. Some beta people takes 2.5-3 years.
Definitely. I've been working on a book with somebody, a co-author, for a long time, and we've had interviews of people and other things we've added to the book. And yeah, it's got to be more than a year, I think. But you know, it's also because if you were a writer, a full-time writer, where you had an advance and you were with a publishing company, that's your full-time job. So it's a little different, but you work and I work and we all do things. And the person's writing this while they're working, especially your first users, you ask them to do it. So
Now,
did you at least learn something from that group? Or was it just like, oh, I'm glad we got the other 6 or 8, or we've never gotten through this?
We learned something from everybody, which is really cool, right? Like it's one of those things where things are always changing and every book has nuances and slightly different approaches. And so we're always learning something new. And that's the beauty of having really, really strong processes in place is you can go, oh, that didn't quite go as we expected. You know, is that something that we need to tweak, or is that a cool opportunity, or what is there to learn from that? And I mean, this year has been interesting because there's supply chain issues, paper shortages.
Right.
So it's been really, really interesting. And some things you uncover opportunities and some things you're like, oh, we're going to have to do that 2 weeks earlier than we normally do it. And so we're always learning because there's always opportunities to get better and be better. And we're kind of a team of high achievers, so that we're never happy. Like we never are going to ever give ourselves 100%. You know, we're always like, there might be something better over here.
Well, there's always room to grow, but it's good to say that, you know, things aren't failures. They're just opportunities to learn and grow and change. Now, what kind of industries do you see people writing more books for than like real estate? I know is big, right? You're in the real estate business, you're flipping, you're doing this, you're writing a book. What other industries do you see a lot of people pulling out, or are they not necessarily business books?
We work on anything nonfiction, but you know, because of my background in real estate, we've done a lot in real estate and finance. So there's a lot of real estate and finance books that we've done, but we've done a World War II memoir. We've done a book, one of our favorite and our longest.
You mean a memoir of somebody's life who went through World War II?
Yeah, it was actually her uncle. So it was a legacy piece for her uncle who had passed away. So she told his story. But, you know, just a really cool, just one of those cool stories that she did it for family legacy purposes, but she's still out there marketing it. And then we did one on horror. It was a really cool book to find an angle for because we call him our horror historian. He knows everything there is to know about directors in that genre and movies and everything.
So it was a nonfiction book.
It's a nonfiction book because it's about the industry, about the horror industry. But how do you find a hook for that? And it turned out
to find all these people that love horror. It's like a whole culture.
And there's people that not only love it, but they want people around them to love it. And so we angled this book. It's called Screaming for Pleasure: How Horror Makes You Happy and Healthy. And there's actually research that backs up the fact that consuming horror allows you to explore emotions that you don't get to explore every day. And that's happy. That makes you healthier, which generally makes you happier emotionally.
So basically, sheer terror makes you healthier.
Well, because it's an emotion that thankfully
I guess you're right. It's not like you're worrying. You're just terrified. Some people love that. My kids go to Fright Night or whatever it is at Great Adventure or the big parks, and they want to get, excuse the expression, the shit scared out of them. I don't like that. I don't like that. I'm like roller coasters. I watch, you know, those movies come on and they have a clip on TV.
Yep.
You know, the commercial comes out, I look at my wife, I go, yeah, I'm not seeing that. You know, hands come out of the closet, grab the woman, pull her back into the closet. She screams, disappears. Forget it. Not gonna watch that. I won't sleep.
It's not my favorite thing either.
Right. But some people love it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, those are some of the different kind of books, but we do a lot of health, a lot of fitness, self-help, you know, business books, finance, right. Real estate,
wellness, coaching, motivation,
mindset, a lot of mindset stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I met a guy recently who only does memoirs. What was it called? It's kind of called Life Story, I think, but he doesn't.
Okay.
He doesn't self-publish. He writes. He's a writer. He's a copywriter. Mm-hmm. So let's say your grandfather wants to, or you want to have, you know, your grandfather's story not published or sold anywhere. This is for the family.
Yeah.
So he would interview them for, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 hours, whatever, and then write the book in the grandfather's voice. First person. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Look, everybody finds their voice and how they do things. So
yeah,
that's
cool.
Just met him recently. We just did a podcast the other day. Okay. So what advice do you have for people? So you can give advice two ways, really, because you can give advice as an entrepreneur, having started a business, what you would do, wouldn't do, how you get started. Plus you can give advice to people about, okay, you think you have a book in you, or everybody's telling you have a book in you.
Yep.
Where do you get started? What do you do? And then of course they should look you up on the internet, but that's, you know, that can stay.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny from an entrepreneur perspective, it's almost the same thing from a business perspective, from a book writing perspective. It's like the missing piece is action, right? So as long as you're sitting there thinking I think this year I'll do this. It's like, no, I am going
just
to
do it.
This. Yes, I am going to, I am writing a book. I am launching a business because I've met people with great business ideas that they don't do anything. And then 2 years later, somebody else has launched that very brilliant business idea.
Yeah, they see it on Shark Tank. They're like, I had that idea.
Exactly. So, I mean, I think ultimately you just have to start taking action and you're never going to have a perfect plan. So this is both for books and a business. We kind of touched on this, you know, the lights are never going to be green the whole way. So,
I just used that analogy talking to somebody 2 hours ago.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a great analogy. It's true. It's true. And you know, that's your problem with that you have with business plans. And so do I. There's some people that get so caught up with the perfection of what they're trying to create or write or do or whatever. They never get going.
Yep.
And you just got to get going because you're going to learn.
And you're not going to know. Like, and that's the thing. There's going to be things that are going to take you by complete surprise. If you ever need a bigger example than what we have gone through in the last year and a half, right? Like it is unbelievable the things that you will come up against. So you really just always have to figure out your next step. Right. Like, you know, have a vision of where you want it all to go, both your book as well as for, you know, business, and then just figure out your next step and then your next step and keep checking with your vision to make sure you haven't changed directions. Because people who write books, I can tell you, they start one book and halfway through they're writing a totally different book. Right, if they don't have help. Yeah. So, and I think that happens to some people in business too. So, that's
like 12 unfinished projects.
Exactly. That's my general, for book writing. I have a download that I think offers the best kind of support, but it comes back to figuring out who your reader is and what that outcome of the outcome is. And the whole book needs to be focused on that reader. Even if it's your story, even if it's a memoir, you're still always focused on the reader and the reader's experience and outcome from that book.
Right. Because it comes down to what is the purpose of you writing this book, right? And does it become a famous author? Well, then you better be really right about it. But if it's really a piece to promote whatever it is you do or whatever it is you believe, or, you know, you want to teach people about wellness or good eat, whatever, you better go from the marketing standpoint or you're never going to get your message out there.
Exactly.
No matter how great it is. But yeah, that's good advice. I think a lot of people just need to get started and start making mistakes and learn. And I knew a guy was trying to raise money for a company, whatever it was. His goal was to go to these pitch contests and just screw up as many times as he could. He believed that for the first 10 or 12, I'm not getting any money. I'm going to be terrible. And he got very good. And at some point he raised a couple of $1 million. I think it was raised more money for a young person on that site than they'd ever raised before.
But, awesome.
You know, so yeah, I find that I have those problems too. I mean, I write contracts and things like that, obviously, but if I'm writing a piece, a blog piece or working on this book or whatever, sometimes I just got to, as bad as it is, just get it down and start editing it and going back to it and give it a day and go, you know, because your mind has a weird way of fixing things. I mean, it definitely is a process.
Yeah. And a lot of people re-edit what they've written too many times. And, you know, so we set the goal for the first draft to be your bad first draft. Like, just dump the information out of your head. Don't read anything you've written right. the first round. Like, just get the whole thing down. But some people just can't, and they end up with a really beautifully polished first chapter and a book that never finishes. So,
yeah,
you know.
That's true. You know, there's something about staying power, right? You're so exhausted from getting through the first chapter. And you're like, I can't do 15 of these.
Yeah.
And
you never get done. So that's why we're like, don't read anything you've written. Just get a bad first draft, because we can help you from there.
So people can come to you with a bad first draft.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, people come to us with an idea and we'll craft the idea with them. And then they can come to us with a bad first draft or even a gone through one editor, and then we can work with it. As you get further along in the process, it's hard to kind of fix the things.
Yeah.
Some people don't want to go back.
Right.
It's like a house that's, you know, already mostly built. It's really hard to have to tear up the walls and pull out the plumbing to make it right.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you might as well just start over.
Sometimes it'd be easier.
With a new book. All right. Well, I think it's really cool. I think everyone should consider, I'm not saying everyone should write a book, but I think that people should consider, because it is one another way to content market, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know what comes first, the chicken or the egg, because you mentioned before, so somebody wrote a book series, it became a television series. Well, if I do a podcast, does it become, you know, do I write a book on 100? I've done 190 episodes. So do I write a book on 100 lessons learned my first 100 guests, which could be friggin' exhausting just thinking about putting that together. Yeah. But, you know, and then it could become a blog and it become all kinds of different things. Or do you start with the book? You know what I'm saying? Like, I think people, if they're producing content, they're marketing themselves, there's probably a book right there in front of them. They don't realize it.
Yeah.
You know,
a lot of times there is. And that's where it comes back to, who's the reader? What's the outcome that you're offering? And what's most important to help them with? Like, because you probably have 10 books, really. So what right now, what is the most powerful thing that you can offer to that ideal reader that you want to connect with for whatever reason you want to connect with them?
Yeah.
Usually it's a business, you know, this is the business I'm trying to grow, or this is the business, you know, the person I want to sell a product to.
Right.
So focus on that reader and then figure out, okay, what do I have that other people aren't saying a billion different ways? What do I have that's even a tiny bit unique? And my real estate book had something that a lot of books didn't have, in that I was talking about how more properties was not better and how real estate investing was not passive income. And those were the two really common things that everybody was, you know, get rich in real estate, and people thought people with 100 properties had great lives and were rich. And I was really, really peeling back peeling that onion, or peeling back the curtain, whatever you want to say on that, and arguing against that. So if you've got something, even a little thing that's controversial or against what everybody believes in your industry, and it will help your reader to understand that perspective, like, to me, that's where you go with your book.
Yeah, because it piques their interest, right?
Yeah. And it'll stand out for media. It'll stand out for any kind of marketing you want to do for you and your business. So that's my two cents. When you have all these things you could do, that's where I would go. And then every chapter can be a video, can be a blog post, can be an article in a magazine, and on and on and on.
Right. No, I've seen a lot of books become become podcast series.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, what's his name? Ronan Farrow wrote the book, or he did the whole expose on Harvey Weinstein, and that became a book. And then I listened to the podcast series. It's good content. But yeah, I think that, look, it should tell you something about your business too. If you're working on a book and then you come to the conclusion that, you know, people are, they're not really resonating with that. Well, maybe they're not resonating with your product.
Yep.
Or maybe there's something wrong with the rest of the marketing that you're doing. It all kind of has to fit together. You know, I'm not suggesting people should write a book and not do anything else, or they should. People come to me, I'm like, listen, if you're going to start a podcast, well, that's fine. And you better love doing it. But it's not the only thing you're going to do, whether it's off the podcast or not. You got to be out there doing different things. So that's why I was, I forget who connected us. Maybe you have a talent agency guy, or?
Well, there's somebody on my team. And then it also, I work with Interview Connections. And then,
maybe that's
and then, yeah, there's somebody on my team that also reaches out and pitches. When they're pitching our authors for podcasts, they will pitch me if there's one that they see that's a good fit too.
Well, I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah.
So, okay. So what's the way for people to kind of connect with you, with your company, interact, see what you're doing, learn from you? We'll put links in the show notes, but you can tell us.
Sounds good. So the download I mentioned, like, that walks you through creating your hook and who's your reader, that's at booklaunchers.com/7steps. So that's a great resource.
You got to write out the number 7 steps.
No, sorry.
Pound.
7. It's just seven.
Seven steps. The number seven steps.
Exactly. Seven.
Got it. Yeah. Glad I clarified that. Okay. That's me, not you. That's me, not you. Right.
That's good. That's a good clarification. And so, yeah, seven steps. And that will get you the download. And then booklaunchers.tv is my YouTube channel. And that is the best place to connect with me, ask questions. We do live streams and there's new videos. Every Tuesday and Friday, there's new videos that come out. So those are the two best places to go to get help and questions answered and connect with me.
Well, Julie, I can't thank you enough. We do episodes on Tuesday and Thursday on Fridays, which I am also abandoning coming in November. I'm going to just Fridays because I'm exhausted doing all these interviews and stuff. Yeah, we're getting close to 200. So maybe I will call you at some point and say, Julie, I finally decided we got to do like a coffee table book or something with all these interviews. But the problem is I got to transcribe all, you know, it's definitely something for an editor to do that I probably have to pay them to do it or an assistant, because I could like go out of business and not feed my kids because I'm making this book. So yeah, I always find that if you're doing a project, you want to kind of do it from the standpoint of how can I stick with this in the long haul? Like you said, if you make the first chapter perfect, you just peter out as opposed to just getting it on page. So I think, yeah, you definitely have to use that approach. But I can't thank you enough. I know it's like middle of the day in Las Vegas. It's almost the end of the day in New Jersey. And I don't know if it's hot or unbearable out there, or, you know, but whatever. I love Vegas. It's a great town.
Yeah, it's fun. And it's pretty much midday. It's always warm. So it's guaranteed a good day out there.
The desert. Yeah. Well, I thank you for coming on. I appreciate it and have a good weekend.
Thanks so much for having me.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.